Absolutely.
As entrepreneurs, especially when you're newer or younger, whatever you want to call it, you're in a danger zone. If you make one wrong move, it could cost you a lot. Trusting the wrong person costs you a lot.
Exactly.
So if I trust you guys and you guys tell me this is the right person, I don't hardly even need to talk to them. If you say trust them, I trust them. Yep. We're done.
Yeah.
Right? That's about those relationships. So in some of the groups and circles we run in, that's powerful. That's buying that speed.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast. This is episode 138 with myself, Trevor Cowley. As always, Kel Goodman.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah, yeah. Guys, today's a more of a treat for us. Having this individual in office, being able to chop it up with him. He's an individual that we look up to. He's an individual that has also coached us. He's one of our apex coaches from day one, you know, three years deep with this individual. Many, many different businesses, investor, entrepreneur, there's so many different author. You know, I mean, the list goes on to where it can kind of get boring by the time we get to the end of it. That's how much this individual has accomplished. But, you know, just that's all cool on paper. But just who he is as an individual and as a person is even more special than all of the things that we could list out that you guys would all, you know, be wowed over. Right. The planes, all the cool, fun stuff that everybody that's listening to this, that's working towards. This guy already got it.
Yeah, that's
you know, and this is a guy that we surround ourselves with on purpose. Guys, we want you to welcome Jeff Ducharme to the show. Jeff, appreciate you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Just the years that we've been around you has been an absolute pleasure.
I mean, we've been talking about doing this podcast over 2 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, and when we first met, Jeff, let's be real. You're like, okay. How close do we get to this guy? Because he's just so rigid and he's so business and so. But there's so many different layers to them. By the time he's not the type of guy that's just gonna let you into his soul from day one. This is a guy that you have to earn your trust. He 100%. Values his time. He so much so that he's not gonna just give it to anybody.
Yeah.
Right. You have to actually earn that level of respect. You have to actually earn that time for to be around an individual at this level.
Absolutely.
So, where do we start with you? You know, like where
beginning there was light.
Yeah. Where'd you come from, bro? And what was the first thing you saw when you came to Earth? You know, but for real, like talk about maybe your younger years and slowly moving towards entrepreneurship and kind of what that looked like.
Sure.
And what you think motivated you to lean towards entrepreneurship and, you know, choosing to get your face pounded in year after year after year until you finally hit a certain level, you know? Yeah.
So it's kind of weird because a lot of the things, and I think we're all programmed this way, we do things now because of some of the anchors in our childhood, some of the things we experienced.
That's exactly why I asked that question.
Right? You know, and it may be good or bad. Mm-hmm. It might be one of those situations where if some things were messed up in your life, you're like, never again, or I don't want my kid to do that, or I don't want to continue that kind of pattern. Or it could be just appreciating things. So for me, a big part of my childhood is actually appreciating things now, because growing up, my dad was enlisted military. And if you know anything about that, especially back in the day, it means you're very poor, okay? We lived in trailers, eventually did better. By the way, my dad did very well later on in life when he got out of the military after 30-something years, even after a congressional extension to stay in longer. When he retired, he ended up running the most successful branch of GEICO insurance. So he did all right.
Yeah.
But that was way later, and that was actually after I left home. So he gets
to buy
more
toys. So you didn't get the spoils of that as a kid.
Oh, yeah. All the cool toys he got afterwards.
Yeah.
But growing up, you know, back in the day, and I was just speaking about this on stage, I used to think making 50 grand a year was like a lot of money, a lot of money. That's why I aspired to. I'd be like, oh, my gosh, if I could make 50 grand a year, I'd be balling, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, no, not so much. And so
that doesn't cover your 1 month tax bill.
Right.
You know, like.
But growing up back then, and I mean, we didn't take big vacation or anything. To me, camping was a vacation. That's what we could afford. But here's the thing. I had amazing parents. I did not realize we were poor when we were poor because we had a good relationship. And they took care of me. They, you know, they really stepped up. So I had amazing mom, amazing dad. And even later on in life, I carried that with me. I would call my dad more often than anybody, every couple of days. I talk to him 2, 3, 4, 5 times a week, you know? And so
and growing, when you reach out to him, is it just, hey, how you doing? So, is it, hey, I need advice? Is it, you know,
it was a wealth like of
anything? Yeah. It's like, I need advice on business, life, right. this, that.
Oh, yeah.
Just checking in. It could just be it anything and everything.
Think about like some of your best friends, stuff you just want to share everything with. Yeah. Like something cool happens, you want to talk to him. Something bad happens, you want to talk to him. You need some advice, you want to talk to him. He was that guy.
Gotcha.
I mean, he was still my dad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we were so close that I always wanted to talk to him. My mom and I were good too, but it's just different, right?
Yeah.
And so growing up, a lot of stuff that I looked at and got, you know, to be around in the military shaped some of my ideals, shaped some of my values, shaped some of my ideals and relationships and how that worked, how we supported each other and moving a lot. So one of the things that helped me, and at the time I didn't appreciate it, but we moved a lot. I mean, even for a military family, sometimes we move in 6 or 12 months, whatever. So I've lived in most of the states. You know, I've been everywhere. And though as adults, that's kind of cool. And my boys now have traveled to a lot of states already, even at a young age, to expose them to that, which is great. But at the time, here's what I knew. I was always the new kid. The new kid who hadn't been around for 5, 10, 15, whatever years, all these kids and these little cliques. Yeah. So I was always the outsider. And then I kind of developed a very sharp wit and sense of humor and very sarcastic to combat that.
Yeah.
and so I was even pushed out more sometimes. And so that was different. But as an entrepreneur now, I know we're different. I mean, we're a bunch of weirdos.
Yeah, all that stuff serves you very well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. At the time, it was maybe a little bit traumatic, but it helped
now. It's traumatic at one point. Yeah. Then when you finally embrace it, you could utilize it to your advantage.
Yep. Exactly.
You've given some great talks, too, at our dinners. And you've talked about a stage in your life where, you know, food is very important to you and not wasting it, right? Because you were actually, like, homeless. Like, what stage of life was that for you?
So growing up, like I said, we were kind of poor. But then I went through a cycle, and I got in the Naval Academy. I turned it down. I went to ROTC, went to the Navy engineering degree. But in that process, at one point, I didn't have enough money. I couldn't get enough work to pay for things. So I was living on the street for a bit. So I was literally in, you know, college. I was using the gym for showers and stuff, but living literally on the street. And sometimes I wouldn't have enough money to buy food. So I've blacked out from starvation before, but I could not bring myself to go to apply for assistance. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just couldn't. And then later on, my family got very mad at me because they didn't know either. So some people are really close to me. Even then, I kept it from them.
So it's not like you couldn't you couldn't have had help.
I was ashamed.
You were just too prideful.
Yeah, you couldn't to ask let yourself help. Go back home or lean on government for assistance and things like that, right?
And so probably not necessarily the best answer, but it also helped me in some ways because I appreciate, as you've heard me say, I bring people together for a lot of dinners. I take people out to dinner. 99 of 100 times, I won't let anybody pay for dinner. That's something that's meaningful to me, whether it's my family eating together because, you know, back in the day, it wasn't like, oh, I want this for food. No, you're eating whatever's on the plate.
Yeah.
You know, and that's about all we can afford, so you better freaking eat it.
So we were raised.
Yeah.
Top of ramen.
Your ass whooped you didn't clear
your plate. It is what you're not getting your ass down until that plate is clear.
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
And now my kids get mac and cheese.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Right.
Well, what else do you want? Oh, I want that. Okay, here you go.
Right.
Motherfuckers don't even know. You guys are soft as fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel bad for your future because your mom is making you weak.
One of our friends, she makes 4 different dinners every night because her kids are so picky. Not allergic.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, hell no.
What do you want?
I said, let me come over to your house for one week. I'll solve this.
Yes. Yeah. A couple bops to the back of their head, eat it, or go straight to bed.
Right.
And they start.
But like, for example, so we just came here. Our team just came here from Vegas.
Yeah.
And there's one thing. So Vegas is known, especially breakfast place, whatever. They serve huge portions, right? If you go to Pepper Mill, some of the other places, it's a ton of food. So I've taken groups there. And before we leave, I say, oh, no, get boxed. Like, oh, no, I said, no, it's not for you. And I have the waitress box up everything. We homeless take it out. People. We walk out. You walk 1 or 2 blocks. You can find some homeless people. Give it to them. Because I hate seeing food wasted because it means something to me. I've been there. I've been starving. I know what it feels like to not
if
have food.
Somebody would have walked out of a building and said, here you go, Jeff.
Right.
That little teeny gesture that meant nothing to you because you were going to throw it in the trash can meant the entire world to that individual in that moment.
Exactly.
It was like literally to them, God answered my prayers. Like I needed a meal, you know, and we look at it like it's absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
So that's a cool perspective.
And so here's our thing. I think everybody should be broke at some time in their life.
Oh, yeah.
Preferably earlier, but that makes you appreciate what you have now. I mean, we've all got friends where they came from a family who was a little more well-to-do, you know, and they don't appreciate some of the stuff they get. And because they don't appreciate it, they don't take care of it. How many times do we see somebody buy their 16-year-old a brand new car for like 50, 60 grand, and they trash it because they didn't earn it. Yeah. They didn't do anything to get it, you know, and so they don't appreciate it.
When you go through the pain and the suffering of what you, in order to get what you say that you want, then you value that thing a lot more when you finally get there.
What about not just being poor one time in your life, but actually accumulating some pretty good wealth and then losing it all?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I went through this crazy stage in business where, like, I freaking lost it all. I had to go back to knocking doors while I'm trying to keep my business afloat. And, dude, I had so much growth from that. Like, some of the greatest epiphanies came from that moment.
And that's one of the things, and in fact, John and I have talked about this. If I've spent well into seven figures into coaches, consultants, whatever. I know you guys have too. And people think I'm crazy for that. I'm like, no, that's part of how I grow. And I coach and consult people. And you've heard many people say, well, I wouldn't want to be coached or consulted by somebody else who doesn't also have coach or consult. But here's the other thing. If you have always had success in your life, you're not going to be my coach. You have no value to me. Show me somebody who's been knocked down the dirt, already had their teeth knocked out pretty much in business and life, and then got back up. That's the person I want. Whether it's an employee, a partner, anything. If you haven't been tested, I can't trust you. Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth, right? I want to know you've been punched in the mouth and you came back.
How did you respond?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Mm. Well, we talked on our podcast not that long ago about, I don't know what episode it was, but I had read an article the night prior or a video or something that Warren Buffett will not invest into businesses or entrepreneurs, let's say, unless that entrepreneur's already failed twice.
Yeah.
Because he wants to know that they're resilient and they're pretty much, they should have made the mistakes that give them the lessons that they needed to now ultimately be successful.
Yeah.
Right.
Develops grit and you need it.
You learn the lessons getting your face pounded and like, I don't want to feel that anymore. Mm-hmm. You don't learn lessons going to the bank and saying, I would like to deposit this $1 million check.
Right. Well, plus, as you move up, there's more and more on the line. Oh, I'd rather make the mistakes down here than lose more up here, lose 10 times more, right?
Yep.
And so in one of my past relationships, I was engaged, and it fell apart. I won't go too far into it, but I'll say I found out some things about her that were really bad, like check off every box you can think of. And so we'd separate. But at the time, I was stupid because I was in love.
Her name was, looked past all that or what?
So, worse. Her name was on my house. Her name was on my Porsche 911, my Escalade, my truck, my building, my business, pretty much every asset I had, her name was on it.
Mm. Following your heart instead of your brain?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's not as hard he was following.
Yeah, right.
It's a heartbeat, though.
Yeah. And so here's what it came down to. When we separated, and I had to get an attorney, even though it wasn't really a divorce, but her name was on everything.
Yeah.
No matter how she got there, I had to buy her out. Mm. That was expensive, very expensive. And the stress it put on me around this time, this is probably the most pivotal time of my life because I had lost my father. He died of cancer. I had to go through 1 year to the date later, which is actually just after her. So lost him, then lost her. And when I say lost her, not that I don't know where she is, but anyway. And then that stress magnified some of my medical conditions. I have ulcerative colitis. That put me off the deep end. I had to go to Mayo Clinic. Then I had to have massive surgeries, pretty much die on the table. Then went through a period of life where I almost died, or was told I was going to die 3 or 4 times. So it's like this spiral of losing my dad, losing her, medical problems, you know, put me in the dirt, like literally. And so that changed a lot of what I was doing because of how I was running my business.
Yeah,
it was great loss financially with her, personally, emotionally with dad, and then medically with me and being expected to die. You know, and so it was crazy when doctors telling you, you know, we've never seen this many blood clots in a live human being before, ever.
Right.
You know, we can't figure out how some of your organs are even functioning. And doctors telling other doctors, he's not going to make it through the night. He's got maybe 12 hours. That kind of stuff. And you start thinking, you know, maybe I should do things a little different. Yeah. And realizing that you can't micromanage everything. You need to delegate and build better systems and structures than what I was doing in my life. So I didn't kill myself, basically run myself in the ground. And so all that kind of came together. And it was the worst time in my life. And yet if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be where I am now.
But you can look back and extract so much from that terrible time.
Yeah. I mean, it was so broken. And yet if that hadn't happened to me, only thing I could think of is worse is staying with her and being miserable. A therapist and a counselor told me one time, just a friend of mine, they counseled divorced couples, whatever else. They said, if you find anybody that's been in a long-term relationship, anybody, 5, 10, 20 years, whatever else it is, and they separated, ask them this. Go back. How many years are you happy? And almost every time, whatever the number is, it's half. They're 10 years, they're happy for 5. You're 12 years, they're happy for 6. and they spend the rest of that second half, so to speak, rationalizing,
yeah,
not wanting to start over, whatever else, to stay in it when they should have just left. And they stick it out, they waste more of their life, and they get out of it. I look back at mine. Mine was 12 years, 3.5 months to the day, but who's counting? And I looked at him like, yeah, I really wasn't happy those last 5 or 6 years. I really wasn't. I'm guessing she wasn't either, but whatever. And getting out of that freed me and opened me to other things because she was, you know, really actually sabotaging a lot of my professional life as well. Mm-hmm. And now, so I've had bad. Now I've had amazing. My wife is absolutely freaking amazing. I've got two wonderful boys. That couldn't happen unless I went through that. And I don't just mean being available.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean how it changed me.
Yeah.
What I appreciate now and what I know that I have to do to be a better man, what I know that I have to do as a professional, what I know that I have to do to keep growing my life. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been in a spot where we would have connected and been right.
Absolutely.
That makes sense?
So basically,
totally makes sense.
So pain basically changes your perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And without pain, you probably will never change your perspective.
Right. People don't change until it's painful enough to change.
Exactly.
So most people don't do something about their weight, don't do something about their health until they're in the hospital.
Until
something
they're
bad
fed
happens.
Up enough.
That's right. They don't fix
you
their
got
car
6 months
until
to live, dude. If you don't lose 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Weird. All of a sudden, 3 months later, they're down 50 pounds.
Amazing, right?
Yeah. You know, so, put a little fire underneath
them. And then eventually you learn that too.
Yeah.
You take from that. I'll create pain for myself. I'll start realizing the pain of if I don't do this, I won't get to here. And I'll internalize that so much that the pain of not being here, I don't need to wait till I'm going to die again. I'll make enough pain for myself to push myself to get there and drive and motivate myself.
It makes so much sense. Like, well, first of all, I've been through some very similar things in past relationships, and it's crazy how much you grow when you finally start having like true awareness, right? Mm-hmm. But it makes so sense. It makes so much sense to me, like how you are and how you operate now, knowing more about what you've been through. Yeah. Like, I don't think people understand. Like Jeff, like, I mean, dude, you're like me a little bit. Like, you don't, you'll operate without a whole lot of sleep, you know, and you impress me all the time when it's like, you know, cause we still do our calls like every couple weeks, man, we do our calls and I'm like, man, Jeff is on the ball, bro. It's just like, he just lets you know, text you like, hey, I'm going to be like a couple minutes late or, hey, let's reschedule it. Or you just call on the right time.
Right.
And it's like, you make it work even though you have all this other stuff going on because you're the type of person that's like, bro, I'm going to honor my commitments.
Right.
I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. And that's like developed through going through that type of shit.
Well, absolutely.
You know, and that's.
And we see that a lot these days. There's a lot of people talk a good game.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't follow through.
Exactly.
And that's becoming more and more apparent to me these days. And what I've realized, even going through that stuff, is if I can't do that, I can't serve the people I say I'm going to serve.
Yeah.
And in reality, I'm not going to have the life I want. I don't just mean financially. I can't stand living in a way that's going to stress the hell out of me. I can't stand living in a way that's just not who I am. So people ask me all the time, well, what's your favorite thing to do? I'm like, I only do things I like to do. That might sound really arrogant, but I'm to the point in my life where I'm not going to do stuff I hate to do. I'll get somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I don't know, accounting. You know, hey, I ain't doing that shit.
Hey, we got a plug. We got a plug for accounting.
Right.
We'll do an intro.
But that's just it. I mean, people get amazed how much stuff I get done, but part of that is having the right people, the right relationships, the right systems. I'm not trying to micromanage anymore. And part of the reason I'm a good leader in my mind is because I used to be a terrible one.
Yeah.
You know, I used to micromanage people. I used to hire people
and
do their job for
me. That was one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is what are some of the qualities that you would consider an individual needing to have in order to be a good leader?
So the first one, and this may sound cliche, is actually caring about your people. Mm-hmm. If they're just a body or a number to you, you're not really leading people.
Right.
You know, the idea is a leader to me is to get more out of them than they'd get out of themselves and plug them in or get them in the right seat on the bus, whatever cliche, you know, analogy you want to use, so that you both win. A lot of times people view leadership and management the same.
Yeah.
You know, one thing my dad said a long time ago was you lead people, you manage paperwork. Okay.
Yeah.
Another example for often now, you talk about integrators, whatever. A lot of times you look at a manager in a business setting and a leader, the leader is the one trying to drive vision and progress, whereas the manager is making sure the wheels stay on, right? Yeah. Because left to my own devices, I'll knock the wheels off the cart every time, okay? We'll be moving forward, but everything will be on fire behind me.
Yeah, right? It's going fast.
Yeah,
and the wheels are going like this. Shaking, about to fall off.
And so it's finding those people and first caring about them, then realizing and checking your ego to find people, because I always thought I did their job for them because I'm better, right? And what you have to realize is...
Well, you almost feel like you're helping them, you're helping you. And in reality, you're not helping yourself because you're handicapping
you're
them.
Yeah, you're getting in the way.
You're not allowing them to step up to the challenge and prove that they can be an all-star. If you never put them in a tough situation, how do you know they're an all-star?
You gotta let them step
up. The only way you know if somebody's great is by putting them in situations where they have to be great.
Right. Let them get that chance.
Exactly.
And for me, so like let's say I had on that time, I think I had 5 employees. I thought, you know what? I got to give them that chance because even if they're 80% as good as me, 5 times 80 is 400%. That's 4 of me. And if I say I want to do this and make this impact, then I have to do that and not live small of it just being me. So if 5 of them do 80% is going to be cool. That's 4 times what I'm doing. Let's roll. Then what you realize is they're 100% as good as me, just at different things.
Yeah.
So being a leader isn't trying to get more me. It's trying to put them in the right spot to be better than me in these right areas. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be great at everything.
Understanding their strengths.
Exactly.
And making the adjustments. Mm-hmm. That's the entire job of as a coach.
Right.
You're the sixth man. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we need you in this position because of this. His job is to put people in a position for the team to win and for those individuals to bring value to the team based upon their skill set, right?
Absolutely.
And so we've had many people before start in sales and then they move around to a different position because it's like, oh, you're not good at sales. But they are valuable because they show up on time, the good energy, good attitude. We don't want to have that person leave our ecosystem.
Right.
Where can we create a position or a spot for that individual?
Move them
because
over, yeah.
they are valuable. It's just up to us to create that role or that position. And I honestly think that every business owner that's listening to this right now, whether you know it or not, there's things that you're not doing that if somebody's not necessarily working out in a certain area, find another area of your business that they could serve you that you might not even have yet.
Right.
Create that bucket.
Create an opportunity.
Create an opportunity with inside your organization for your organization and for that individual. Mm-hmm. Too many people are so blinded and focused on their core business that they don't see all of the opportunities and the buckets that they could be filling. Just like we talked about here. Yeah, our core business is accounting, but guess what? Jeff is one of the owners of an HR company as well as 30 other companies, but anyways, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. You know? But to your point though, it's you first find good people.
Yes.
Then find a way to maximize and use them and help them. You know, we don't need to have this rigid idea of, well, this is this position. I don't care. If I find a good person, I'll find a way to win with them.
Yes.
Right. That's how I've gotten actually partnered in a lot of companies.
Finding good people is the hard part. Yep. Right. And if you find it, figure out how to keep them, whether you're shifting them or not. You know, but the idea is everybody's complaining and bitching. It's hard to find good help. It's hard to employees, hiring's tough.
Yeah.
Cool. Just because they don't match that role or wear that outfit and they don't look as good in it as you'd like, put them in a different outfit.
Right.
Put them in a new role.
And a lot of times the owner gets this attitude and they think it's all about an employee. A lot of times it's the leader. They're not doing a good job. That's why they're not attracting the right talent because they're not being attractive or helping them or serving the employee. And the employee will find somebody else. You know.
And that's a great point because a lot of leaders don't actually focus on leading.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the thing you got to understand about leadership is like, it's never ending. Like, you know, you can work on it and focus on it and you're going to die an amazing leader, but there was still work to be done.
Right.
It is literally never ending.
Yeah.
But in order to build something amazing, you have to focus on it and actually like really put focus on what kind of leader am I? And do I have enough humility to actually like try and put these people in the right places or learn from these people and actually let them win?
Right.
Let them serve me and like I can serve them by being a great leader.
That's it.
You know?
Yeah, so. I heard somebody say something like the world has plenty of managers. The world needs more leaders.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's missing.
But these guys start a company or guys or gals and it's like they don't really consider themselves the leader. And that's what kind of fucks everything up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they don't focus on their leadership.
They just don't own the leadership role. Yeah. They just don't step into it fully. They kind of dabble in it, but they're not really owning
it. They went to a seminar. They think it's cool to call themselves a leader today.
Yeah.
You know, but then they end up saying, well, if I have to teach this guy to do it, screw it, I'll do it myself. I'm like, that's not how you build a team. You got to train them and accept part of the cost, part of the investment, not even cost, investment, because there's ROI, is letting them screw up. No, it's going to cost your company money.
Your boxing coach don't get in the fucking ring and fight for you.
Exactly.
Even though he's watching you, your face getting pounded. Yeah. And every time when the bell rings, dude, keep your fucking right hand up. You're getting murdered out there. Yeah. He can't go up there and put the right hand, like,
and that that's
he's leading that individual to try to win. But if that individual is not the right person because they just don't take feedback well, or they say this, And then you have the same conversation 30 fucking times.
Right.
Which is, you know, an issue that we had of an individual that we had to let go last week is because it was, they're connecting.
They're not doing.
No one's home, I guess, because it just is the same issue over and over and over.
Absolutely.
So eventually, you got to be a good enough leader to identify, okay, yes, they're a great individual. They can be an asset. They are a good learner. They want to learn. They come to you with questions, and you tell them one time or two times, and then they just, there's the people that just get it.
Yeah.
And then there's other people you can tell them 100 times. It doesn't matter.
If you make a mistake or screw something, hey, no problem.
Yes.
If you do the same mistake 13, 14, 15 times, all right, we got a problem.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But then the other side for the leaders, I see this a lot lately. They treat their people more like a commodity. Like they think, oh, they're just like me. And as I said to begin with, you have to care about your people, care about them enough. And we just spoke about this a little bit ago. Everybody says, oh, treat other people the way you want to be treated. And that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Treat them how they want to be treated. So, for example, if you don't know the differences in your employees, your team, your contractors, they're different people. You need to know what motivates them. Some people are purely cash. For example, here's a big one right now. Some people really like public recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, they hate it so bad that if you do it too much, they will quit.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they're embarrassed and they're insecure, whatever it may be.
When their face turns bright red and they're like, I do not like eyeballs on me.
Exactly.
Do not recognize me in front of everybody.
It's abusing.
Yeah.
You should know better.
Yeah.
And so instead of having this standard blanket bonus or blanket this, treat people like people. Find out what matters to them.
Yeah.
Can you tell me something about each one of your people, about their family, their personal life, what matters to them, what do they care about? If you don't know these things, don't tell me you care about your people.
Yeah.
You
know? Harry. Stephanie here behind the camera cares about Harry. I do know that. Nick, I don't know what you care about yet. But to my defense, you're a day and a half old. So I'll figure out what you care about after a week. I only care after you survive at least a week.
That is like one of the shittiest parts of like being the top leader, right? Is like when you're developing other leaders, and we've been dealing with this, man, for the last year and a half as we've been developing leaders, it's like, you know, you do allow them to make mistakes, but when you have a client, a very important one, call you up because that leader made a mistake, you're like, man, someone I care about, I don't want to lose.
And you don't and you have to have that conversation.
And you can't make an excuse. That's just not who you are. Yeah,
exactly.
But and then it's just a teaching moment for you to teach that leader, but you are going to lose some crazy, valuable, awesome like relationships or clients.
That's also a big opportunity because I used to really worry about that and be paranoid about it and have paralysis, worry about that kind of stuff. Yeah. And here's what I figured out. When you make a mistake with a company, that's sometimes one of the biggest opportunities because when you fix it so well, they will never leave you.
Exactly.
Because unless they're stupid, they should know something's going to go bad sometime.
Yeah.
It's not if, it's when.
And
if you take care of it over the top of it, damn.
Yeah. I'm going to bring a case study right up to back that shit up. I'm going to co-sign you right now. remember Skinner on our podcast?
Yeah.
Skinner, you know Skinner, right?
Client.
Yeah, exactly.
You know it's all the best people are my client.
Yeah,
looking and the best people.
That's
are
right.
And we all bring the best people on our podcast that all happen to know each other because we're just all the best and the best hang out with each other, right? So, but anyways, to your point, he talked about doing a huge order for a college or a university freshman, right? It was 10,000 like earbud things or something like that. And on one side, it was perfect. On the other side, it was backwards.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And they ended up like comping the whole order and losing a shit ton of money, just doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that every year they order.
But that long-term relationship, yeah.
Always.
Exactly.
You have to be a future thinker.
You would think that like, holy shit, we made a mistake. We just fucked it. We're screwed.
Right.
Yeah. Screwed the pooch here. We're no longer getting that business anymore. How you respond is far more important to the issue at hand.
Because then you're showing the customer, the client, how much they matter.
Yes.
Not just blowing them off like a commodity in a transaction.
Correct.
You know, in these days, look at the companies in the last year or two with all the COVID crap, whatever you want to call it. The companies who actually showed value.
I call it bogus.
Yeah, exactly. Scam. But you look at the companies that are still standing.
Yeah.
It's because they truly showed value for their customers, clients, showed value for their people, their staff. The ones that are just, you know, commodities and everything else and just did whatever and didn't show that kind of value, they're gone.
Yeah.
So whether it's 08 and stuff that happened then, stuff's happening now, there's always this sorting out period. And I think it's actually kind of a good thing because it takes some of the ones that really probably shouldn't even be in business and knocks them out.
Yeah.
Yep.
And leaves the best standing to help other people.
And it gives them a good excuse of why they got knocked out. So they don't feel so bad for the rest of their life. You know, that 08 crash or that 2020 virus. You know, they can be talking about that in 2050.
Some will.
Yes, some I guarantee will that's their some people that's their excuse. Will. Yeah, they're going to pull that shit out of their pocket probably a billion times between now and the day they die. You know, like, oh, I was great.
Yeah.
But.
Right.
You know, the big but.
Yeah.
This thing happened back in the day.
Uncle Rico.
I was around when the reason why you're still wearing a mask, kid, started and ended my business. You know, like, you're going to have some excuse makers, you know. And again, you know, we talked about this even an episode or two ago. Learn how to fucking operate in the environment that you're in. Absolutely. Sometimes you can control your environment and sometimes you can't, but it's your job to adapt to whatever the situation is so that you can put yourself in the highest probability of success. Right. It's not the situation, it's you.
Right. It's how you respond to it.
Yeah.
Correct. Exactly. How you respond to a shitty situation will determine how your life ends.
We're just going, well, this is how we've always done it. We're just going to keep doing this way. Yeah, ask a Blockbuster Video how that went.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look how many.
I think they still have one location.
It's one. It's not owned by them. Yeah, it's one. It's not owned by them, but yeah, I looked that one too.
I think I did read something like
they that. Have one?
The last standing. Yeah.
They have one in Iowa. No, it's Hollywood. Never mind. It's Hollywood Video. Yeah. But they have one in Iowa where my son went to college, and I can't remember the name of the town. It was a weird name.
That's funny. By the way, do you guys know the biggest difference between those two from back in the day? Do you remember?
No.
The biggest difference is Blockbuster will send you collections for 14 cents. Okay? Hollywood just waits and waits. And you'll forget, man, I haven't rented anything there in a while. You go to rent something that's $87 for this one tape because you have all these fines. Gotcha. Oh, I knew there was a reason I wasn't coming here.
Yeah, you know. $7 for the movie.
Yeah.
Grab the card. And 80 for the interest.
Pretty much. You know? So that was the biggest difference between the two of them. Blockbuster will harass you and send collections for 14 cents.
Hey, it didn't help keep them in business any longer. So it might have helped them stay a little more profitable.
But again, look at some of the industries right now. They're being stupid.
Yeah.
You know, they're not pivoting. They're not looking for other ways. Look at some of the restaurants.
Yeah.
I know restaurants now, they're going to smaller footprints, eliminating dining rooms even, because they realize how successful they could be delivering food, you know, bringing it to the people versus having a big footprint restaurant. Versus there's some going, oh, we'll just shut down and wait. The government will help us. We'll just wait until we can open up again. Yeah. And they're gone.
Yeah, right?
They got smoked.
Exactly.
So the ones that pivoted, added other kitchens, they let other restaurants come in and cook during off times for meal prep, whatever else they want to do. They found ways to make it happen.
Oh, subleased the kitchen out.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they did all kinds of stuff like that. Found ways to add revenue streams, found ways to serve people. So here's one of the biggest things I see, and it's kind of related here, but most people that want to go into business, they decide, I want to build this widget, or I want to do this service. We're going to sell it because I like it. I invented something, I like it. All right, now let's go find some people to buy it. It's like, no, you stupid shit. Go look at people that you want to deal with. What's their problem?
Yeah.
What's their problem? Now figure out how you can solve that problem, make it, go, here you go.
Yeah.
And they'll buy it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You're not your customer.
Exactly.
They're your customer.
Right. So stop trying to make something and then find a way to force people to buy it. Figure out the problem.
Yeah.
Actually solve the problem, because by the way, it's what we get paid to do, solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
And sell it to them. That's way easier. But most business owners that fail, you know, this is one of the top reasons, because they go build something stupid that they like, you know, and there's no need for it. There's no customer. And even if it's not a need, just a want, a problem, whatever it may be, the ones that take off and go crazy, it's because they filled a direct and immediate need.
Yeah.
So look at some of the companies over the last 2 years that have done that. You know, wouldn't you have liked to have invested in Zoom a little more, or Peloton a little more before it went nuts?
Right.
So some of these things, they position themselves to serve that need. Not the need from 1985, 95, or 05, but right now. You know?
And they don't just stay on that one thing either. They figure out how to monetize their clients based on the, because, I mean, really, I mean, the market dictates what the market wants, right?
And
so Peloton makes shoes, and they make, you know, badass training videos, and they make
badass, lots of apparel. I know this
shorts that have padding.
I see charges. Tens of thousands of dollars worth of apparel that shows up at my house.
But the funny thing is where did they start?
Right.
Yeah.
They had a core idea. Business and build buckets around their core business that
has ancillary to serve that.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the cake. Everything else around it's the icing, the shoes. Because
if they just come out with shoes, they'd have failed.
Yeah.
If they just come out of apparel first, they'd have failed.
Yeah, failed.
Exactly.
They'd have smoked.
Get your core business down to the point where it's well oiled and operated. Figure out how you can add one or two.
Yeah, you do yourself. And now, get this.
I don't watch much TV, but what's the show where they dance? Like one person's famous, one person's not.
The stars.
I don't watch this stuff. Yeah. And so there's people are mad. They're like rioting just about, because one of the Peloton stretchers got on. Their fan base is so freaking loyal they were tipping the scales and all the voting and the calling voting stuff and saving him, even if he wasn't the best, it was Cody. And people were getting mad. It's not fair because all these people, they have raving freak fans. I mean, we got the bike and the treadmill. As soon as Aurora comes out, we're getting that too. You know, my wife just passed on ungodly thousands and thousands of rides now. And I do some, and I like it. It's fun. But you look at their fan base. They're so engaged, so activated.
Oh, yeah.
They can tip the scales even on shows and media and stuff like that. That says something.
Yeah. Bro, they literally took something that's already been in existence for years and years.
It's a freaking bike.
A fucking bike that I saw at my grandma's house in the corner that never 70s. Got used.
Yeah.
You know, with a little, like, that looked like
the fan. The fan, you know?
Yeah, the fan one too,
There was the fan one too.
Those are still around. They're actually pretty tough.
Peloton, all they did was put a damn screen on the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now all of
and a sweet design.
They're sweet.
And a badass marketing plan. Yeah.
But sometimes it's those little things
just
that make
made
the difference.
Something, they made something that was already in existence better because they took something old that was useful and they took technology and said, well, why don't we take this old piece of machinery that and introduce it to technology?
Right.
And then now all of a sudden it's probably a billion plus dollar brand at this point, right?
Yeah.
And it's just fucking a bicycle.
And anything they come out with right now, it'll sell. It's kind of like Apple. Come out with anything, it'll sell.
My wife bought the yoga mat, and it is a badass yoga mat. It's like a little thicker and heavier, and it's like, it's badass. And honestly, you're not doing just yourself a disservice when you don't try and monetize your customer base. You do your freaking customer base a disservice. You do the employees in that company and the other, you know, everybody else a disservice. And so you should always be trying to think of, like, how can I, like, expand my business or come up with more products, or how can I give my customers more of what they want?
Need more into their life.
Yeah, it's not just about earning extra money on these buckets. But
they want,
like,
more of you.
Exactly.
More of your brand.
Exactly.
Or even monetize, like, outside your company. Like, if we have a company or a really important client that needs HR services.
Right.
And Jeff can do a badass job for them. Like, we're doing a disservice by not mentioning
it. Right. Exactly. Yeah. If they have a problem with HR and we know how to solve that problem and we are the individual connecting that person.
Yeah.
Again, as Kel said, if you don't do it, you're an asshole.
Right.
That guy has a need.
Yeah. They
you
trust
know
you.
The individual that has that service.
You have the cure.
Boom. Exactly. Put it together. Yeah. It's like having the cure for cancer and not giving it to anybody.
Yeah. But that's how you people know? Act.
Exactly.
They don't realize, if you, again, care about your staff, if you care about your customer, you should also know enough about them to know what else they might need.
Yeah.
And if it's not yours, you have a trusted partner. A strategic partner in business that can come and you know them, you know they'll do a great job. You're not just selling a bill of goods or some bullshit affiliate program where you're just making a link or whatever else, you know the people and they go screwed up. It's somebody that you'll stake your reputation on, knowing that, hey, if I refer them to you, I know they're going to do a good job.
Yeah,
I know
you
need it. Boom, let's do this. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Exactly.
You know?
But those bullshit affiliate programs are what kind of ruin it for.
Oh, absolutely.
If Jeff wants to kick me back for referring him a badass client so that I can then reward some of my employees, and everybody should just be happy. The client should be weird. But sometimes business owners, they feel weird about it. Like, nah, I'm just going to refer you, man. You're just trying to make money off me referring over here. You know, it's like, dude, there shouldn't be that fear there.
Well, that's about integrity, though.
Exactly.
Because there's enough people to give us all a black eye because they'll just spam the hell out of everybody with links and links and links and links of service and products they don't even know anything about other than, hey, I get 10% or hey, I get 20%, whatever it is. That's all they know. And then they expose that to their client base and this outburns them, because if you give a whole bunch of your clients to something and they get screwed by that, they blame you.
Exactly.
That was your integrity.
So monetize.
Monetize
integrity.
But at the same time, as what Jeff was alluding to is like, no. Like, I know when I refer people, I only referred people that are going to take care of those people.
Exactly.
Right. And so, like, I think everybody listening to this podcast right now understands the pains of entrepreneurship and trying to find the right merchant people, the right marketers, the right HR company, the right accounting firm, the right, you see what I'm saying? Like, the fucking layers that happen in business. Yeah. Hiring cool, you know, start getting people to work, but there's so many layers to operating a business.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to go through 5 or 10 different marketing companies to find the right one.
Right.
5 or 10 HR merch. Like, so how wasteful is that money when you're like, nah, dude, let me plug you in right here. Boom.
Right.
You're done. You know,
well, and
we didn't have that. Starting our, we had to build our network and invest groups, APEC, you know, and meet the right people and know that now we have a deep vetted network where we've been around them for 2 years, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen how they do business and how they operate with integrity. They're genuine. They're authentic. It's like, cool, this is my people. These are my people.
If you hand them somebody,
if I can serve you, I want to serve you.
Yeah.
Why? Because you're good people. He's my customer. I want to serve you.
Right.
Boom.
Done.
Yeah. You know, you should be a servant. That's really what it comes down to. Are you serving your client at the utmost? Mm-hmm. Are you serving the people in your network to the utmost? You should be looking opportunities to serve both parties.
Absolutely.
Your network 100%. And your clients.
It needs to be win-win, not win-lose. Not just for the money, but for the right things. You know, but the other thing is we're buying speed. So a lot of people, I've had people get confused.
Buying speed.
They see how much money I spend certain things. Or even like when I take my private jet to go places, I say, I'm buying speed. You know, it's not about flex or trying to impress me. I don't care about impressing me. I just don't anymore. I haven't for a while. If you like me, cool. You don't like me, I don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
So, but I can buy speed so I can save time to be my family. But more importantly, to your point, if we have that right relationship, I don't need to go find it. I don't need to go through three or four. I can use that person in the right way to connect my person to buy speed for my client. Boom, it's done. I've got the right person for you. Don't go screw around. I've got the right person to take care of you. That's it.
Absolutely.
You know, as entrepreneurs, especially when you're newer or younger, whatever you want to call it, you're in a danger zone. If you make one wrong move, it could cost you a lot. Trusting the wrong person costs you a lot.
Exactly.
So if I trust you guys and you guys tell me this is the right person, I don't hardly even need to talk to them. If you say trust them, I trust them. Yep. We're done.
Yeah.
Right? That's about those relationships. So in some of the groups and circles we run in, that's powerful. That's buying that speed.
And when you find the people that you know value relationships, then you could do shit like that.
Exactly.
The problem is a lot of people are like, meet somebody for the first, I know a guy, and all they're thinking is dollar signs because somebody said, and they really don't know the guy.
Right,
they know a guy that happens to be in the industry, but they don't know the integrity behind the guy, you know? And then they send referrals and, you know, bad things can happen.
Exactly.
It's a true shortcut, you know? I mean, so many business owners are looking for shortcuts in the wrong ways, and it's like, you can't shortcut our work. You can't shortcut those early days, but you can shortcut all the damn mistakes you make if you have people in your corner that have a
stop trying to do it all on your own.
Yeah,
absolutely. Think you're smarter than everybody.
Yeah. 100%. I do want you to touch on, you know, Insider Investor Club.
Sure.
I think that that's important. You know, again, Jeff has a million different things going on. Investor, business owner, you know, cool shit. Cool.
Business broker.
Broker. Yeah, brokerage. He can help buy, sell businesses, whatever it is. I mean, pretty much, I don't know. The list of what he can't do is probably shorter than the list of shit he does do or can do. Okay. So I think you guys get the point by now. Hmm. But this individual with another individual that is a good friend, Tony.
Mm-hmm. And Arnie.
Arnie's involved. We don't know Arnie the best yet, but
he's newer.
He's with you guys, you know, and we're
with Arnie a little bit.
He's with Tony, he's with Jeff.
He's quiet at first, but he's
good. He's good people. Yeah. You know, if we know he's rolling with you guys. And what they've done is they've created an investor club to where, look, I mean, everybody that makes decent money gets to the point where they're like, man, I don't know what the fuck to do with my money. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have the network, the vetted network
that we
just talked about.
Right.
In order to feel comfortable and confident to put your money in a place that's new and different, because most entrepreneurs are putting the money in their own business where they have control, so they feel somewhat, still uncomfortable. You got to, you know, putting money anywhere is uncomfortable. But when you have control over it, it feels good. I know me and Kel, we've invested a lot of money just in the last year and a half or 2 years. And it's still scary to go wire $250,000. And then next week, another $250,000 or, you know, whatever. And, it feels better when you know who you're wiring the money to, things like that. And so I want you to talk a little bit about, one, how do people vet an investment, and then kind of roll into what Insider Investor Club is and why it was created and all
I'll say before he does answer this is Jeff is a person that I reach out to help me vet investments sometimes.
Yeah.
Like sometimes he's pointing things out that I'm like, oh shit, they are ripping points on the top. And that's okay. That makes sense sometimes, but not a lot of times.
Yeah.
Or, no, it's performance based and they're only taking points on the gains. Okay, now I want to get more involved, right?
Yeah.
So Jeff's the dude that helps me kind of like vet that shit sometimes. So I know he's going to drop some bombs on this.
And that's actually a big part of how we formed, the why, to your point and to your question. So most of my business, not all, but most of them added onto an ecosystem. In other words, so martial arts was my first business. And once I figured out that all business is the same, I started scaling and adding on to that. I had multiple locations. Then I dipped into other businesses. And as we did, we started realizing, to our previous discussion, well, they also need this. Well, I'd start referring out or against them. And then I'm like, they want me to come into their company because they realize what I can do for their company. And I'm really good at building companies and expanding and making them worth a lot. So they had some incentive to bring me into their company. So we started adding on and bolting on these other companies to, again, create this ecosystem to serve our people, serve our clients. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the business brokerage, whether it's marketing, whether it's consulting, whether it's coaching, whether it's we've got a financing company in how, we've got the HR company, we've got this investment. The investment thing, to your previous statement here, people start stacking money, and the smart ones realize, hey, I don't want to go blow it on stupid stuff. I'd rather put in something to make more money and let that stack and have these different, whether it's passive, semi-active, whatever, but have more money building for me. So personally, two of the top things on my list I hate are lazy people and lazy money. So if I have a whole bunch of money sitting there, in my mind, I'm losing. If I have 100 grand sitting in a bank account, I'm losing 20, 30 grand a year because of the opportunity cost of what it should be making and then compounding.
Absolutely.
And then I was doing my own investing, and so was Tony. I got to meet Tony and Cabo a couple years ago, and then met Arnie, and we're all kind of pissed off. It's actually funny how many businesses start from people being pissed off, right? I was pissed off about people getting taken advantage of. I didn't come from much, work my ass off, get some stuff. I watch other people work their ass off, get some stuff, and then somebody steps in and screws them over, has a good dog and pony show, and takes their money for a scam or something else, or they put in something, and when it hits the fan, they kind of go, they shrug and they walk away from it.
Yeah.
Whereas some people are involved in investments, if it goes bad, they'll step 3, 4, 5 nights in a row puking and getting it done, whatever they have to do to fix it, because they have that kind of personal accountability and integrity to make sure the investment is fixed. You know, whether it's real estate, whether it's a private equity deal, whatever it is, everything's going to hit a bump on the road every once in a while.
Yeah.
So that's where we start talking about betting on the jockey, not the horse, mm-hmm. which is when I met Wags, Aaron Wagner. That's why he and I connected real well, because we both have that philosophy. I learned it when I was 6 in upstate New York with my grandfather teaching me about horse racing, about betting on the jockey, and at some point he'll bring a horse across the line, you'll win a bet. I'm like, what are bets? Then I started learning about betting on horses at 6. And so I took
like
that.
Like I said, he knows everything. and he's slowly verifying.
So I took that in life and in business. So I don't care what the numbers are. I care, but the wrong person will screw up even the best deal. We've all dealt with some people in our life that you know they're shady as hell, right? Mm-hmm. You know they're going to screw up that deal, even if it looks good on paper. So we were sick and tired of some of these people, you know, taking advantage of entrepreneurs in particular. And so Tony and I and Arnie got together and said, hey, let's just put something together and let's teach people. Let's help show people. We've been through some stuff, right? Let's show them how to not make those mistakes. Tony walked away from Wall Street and turned up all his license, turned away, you know, to step back in and help people the right way and not get taken advantage of. And so in our deals, we're not financial advisors. We're not attorneys. We're not accountants. We advise them to use theirs. But we'll find and have access to deals that most people will never see in their life. They bring them to us. I turn down over 100 deals a week. You know, but as we're vetting them and looking at these and considering these, we find the right ones that are balance of good return as well as mitigating risk. And we put it together in structure, then we teach people. Say, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to jump in with us, here we go, and we'll put it together. We'll be partners. We're putting money in. We're not selling them a bill of goods here. We're putting money in and inviting them on some of our deals. And we're very careful to make sure that they're getting advice from professionals. We're not their advisor. We're doing everything on the up and up. It's legal. We're not trying to, you know, sell and be what do you want to call it? Yeah, a type of advisor. So
I mean, hell, just so you guys, I mean, if we went up and spoke at one of the events in Salt Lake, and it was an amazing group of individuals, and it was an amazing event. I really enjoyed it, and I don't like going out of town, so that says a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I hate going out of town.
But that's it. But so, let's go back to relationships, for example. But I had that rapport with you. Say, hey, guys, could you come help us?
Yeah.
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 I'm a little more hard like Jeff, man. I like being on the go.
It's not my thing. But, you know, there's probably going to be people in the group that literally just join the group to be surrounded by amazing people.
Absolutely.
And even if they're not that interested in investing today, but who knows where somebody will be in 2 years, five years, 10 years. It would still be good to be around the type of people who know what to do with money in general.
Absolutely.
And to be around like-minded individuals that are just above average.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of it, too, is protecting. So, for example, one of the deals you guys are aware of called Everbowl. That's a franchise. Yeah. We bought multiple. Yeah. There are some people we all know, and they got together, and I'm going to buy one. I was one of the first ones in when it got in. I talked to Ryan. I said, dude, I'm in. And then I started grouping some people and say, hey, here's what I know, because I own some franchises, like literally the franchisor.
Yeah.
You mitigate risk by not buying one. You buy three, you buy five, whatever else. That way, if one location is a dog,
I've heard
that one's taking it, right?
Yeah.
So I advised and gave suggestions and advice and educated a lot of people. And the ones that listened to me jumped in with us or jumped in with somebody else, which is fine. I don't care if they group with us. We bought 8 of them on that one. We just bought another 20 locations, something else in the same group. But the whole idea is multiple locations, right? Some of the people, I won't name them, bought one. And theirs are in areas of California that are completely shut down. They're getting killed.
Yep. We bought one. Yeah.
And so
we're guilty of buying one.
Yeah. And so we've got some that are doing, we've got two of the best performing in the United States, and it balances out.
Yes. You know? And, I've heard that. I've heard that, like, an individual that owned, like, Subway or something. And I talked to that person, and they owned, like, eight as a group or something like that together. Mm-hmm. And he goes, it just depends, man. Like, every single month we have, like, two or three duds.
Right. But it balances out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what he said. He goes, in this business, I have to spread the risk.
Yeah, you have to accept it. Right? Yeah.
And this store that might have lost money 2 months in a row now made money this month, but my hitter lost a little bit of money that month, you know. Yeah. And it balances out to where they have consistency each month mm-hmm. rather than the ups and downs, or just having one store that's just that a dud, lose your money, you're gone.
Yeah. Right? And that's the point. So every asset class,
yeah,
every real estate deal, every types of deal, there's certain things that if you don't know what you don't know kind of thing, it's not that you did anything wrong, but you really lost out.
Yeah.
You really screwed up the opportunity. Just like when we were going over deals, and this is something else we do for our clients. We're not going to advise them, but we'll point out things that, hey, you might want to pay attention to this and pay attention to this.
Talk
you
to your attorney about this, this, and
yes,
this, and get some advice on it.
You get this big packet of all this legal mumbo-jumbo stuff. They're not used to it. It's kind of in a lease. If you lease somewhere, there's certain things to know. For example, I just walked away from a business acquisition. It was an iconic steakhouse in Nebraska. They've been around over 30 years, and we're going to buy it. I had a manager in place. I'm not running that, but we're the right people.
You walked away from that.
Yeah. And so, And so there's several people that wanted to go invest with me, and almost the finish line, I mean like the 1 yard line, we got everything all cleared out, everything deals done. The landlord gave me their lease, went through it. And there's a couple deal breakers in the lease. And for example, one of them, if you've leased commercial locations, is about HVAC. Mm-hmm. I learned this the hard way a long time ago.
Where you had to pay for your own?
So yeah. So what it should be, there's always in leases, there's the landlord more favors them, favors the tenant or fair, you know, or what I usually call landlord, screw the tenant and fair, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a screw the tenant clause, which is fair means I pay for the controls and the vent stuff in my demise space. Yeah. Landlord should be responsible for the rooftop units, which can be 20 or 30 grand each. And there's multiple up there.
Yeah.
That's a capital expense. That's just like the parking lot, the building, everything itself. To put that on the tenant when those things have been up there 10, 15 years, and you might have to pay $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 in month 8 of your lease.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a couple other things in the lease as well that were just absolute deal breakers. Mm. And if they're going to put that in, that shows me who they are and how difficult it's going to be to deal with them in the future. And I can't allow that in investment because I'm protective of my money. I'm even more protective when people come in with me.
Yeah.
And there was going to be a couple investors on that deal that want to get in with me, just want to be a partner with me.
Yeah.
And we're going to put that against it. We got to walk. And they couldn't believe it. But when you've done enough deals, you start realizing those red flags, kind of like a relationship. After I've been with my ex for 13 years, 3.5 months, the next year of dating, as soon as I saw red flag, done. Yeah. you know when to run because it's like,
well, you hung on for that extra 5 or 6 years.
Right, right.
You know, and I'm sure that taught you to, you know, take whatever around the barn and put it down when it's time to put it down. You know, don't drag it with you
longer than it needs to be. Here's a huge point though. I gotta address with that, right? Because when you start getting into the stages of business where you want to start investing, you get very impulsive.
Right.
Okay?
Emotional.
And you're so excited, you don't go through those agreements with fine tooth combs, and I'm guilty of it. When I bought my wife's hair salon, that exact clause was in there, I was told. And I was like, what? I didn't even go through it that good. And I'm like, I have to pay for this AC unit that just went out. And I was like stressed out because this hair salon's not even making money.
Right.
And I'm just like, holy shit. So I open up the agreement. I start going through it. And I was like, I actually found where it was wrong. But the people that were in that building before us, they were paying for all the maintenance of that stuff this whole time. Wow. And so when I went through the whole thing.
You're paying the cams plus.
Yeah.
Plus
I should have done it ahead of time.
That's not triple now. That's squat. Yeah.
Making money ever. I should have done it ahead of time, but I didn't. And luckily I went through the agreement afterwards and found where it was incorrect, right? Mm-hmm. But the owner of the building and the old tenants, they all thought, oh yeah, this is the agreement, right? You gotta pay for the AC unit. And so, but anyway, the whole point isn't really that. The whole point is like you have to really actually, if you don't know how to vet a contract or read a contract, you need to make sure you have people in your corner like Jeff that will do it. And you need to go through it the best you can.
Right.
Because it's very, when you're excited and you see those potential returns and those pitch decks and you see all these things and you're just like, here's my money, man.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe whether you know the jockey or not, you still need to vet the deal.
Right.
Yeah. You know? I mean, we just got pitched that deal like a week or two ago with that Sam dude or whatever. Yeah. And at the very end, I said, cool, man. Every single presentation I've ever been presented has always been awesome.
Yeah, no brainer.
You know what I mean? Like
every Ponzi scam I've looked at looks the best.
Yeah, right. Exactly. 60% returns monthly?
Yeah.
I'm in. You know, where do I wire?
Yeah.
You know, well, like
kind of selling people that, we know have been burned with Amazon stores, some of the e-commerce stores, things like that. Yeah. Not that they're all bad. I'm sure there's good ones, but
I was sitting at dinner in Dallas with some people, and I was just like, and they're like, should I? Like, niece. And a couple other people.
Yeah.
And I talk, and after I literally probably said like six or seven words. And he's like, thank you.
Right.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And a couple other guys were like, one's, I already do it. And the other one was like looking into doing it. And I was like, all right. Talk to you next year.
Yeah, yeah.
See, tell you, you won't have a ride on. You'll have a ride off.
You know? But that's the whole thing. It's actually more important to know when to walk away from a deal versus putting into it. Say no more often.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how you save your money.
What we, I mean, just recently we walked away from a deal that we invested 20 grand into because it was like, look, our time is just getting way too valuable. Right. We can't be in the weeds on this little startup thing.
Right.
Yes, it has a lot of potential. Yes, I believe in it. Mm-hmm. But also understand when it's time to say no and focus on the big picture, the things that are actually really going to move the needle financially and make you financially independent for you and your family. Eventually, you're just not the guy to be in the weeds on the startup.
Well, and that's another thing a lot of people do. Know? They think they're making an investment. They're starting their business. They're buying themselves another job.
Yes.
It's like, I'll make an investment. Yeah. Now, I might serve in some advisory capacity from time to time, but I don't need another job. I don't have time for that. I'll invest. I'll back the truck of money. Yeah.
On that investment, I said, what do you need, time or money? When they called and said, hey, are you interested in an opportunity? I said, it depends. Do you need time or money?
Yeah.
I said, I got the money.
Yeah.
I ain't got the time.
Well, no, I got time, but most people can't afford my time. Like, that's what I tell them. You can't afford my time. Well, we want you to follow this like 10 hours a week. Really? You want to know what it's going to cost you?
Yeah.
You don't want to know.
Yeah. You ain't got the money for that, bro. Yeah. Go get a loan. Call me. Send proof of funds.
Yeah.
Like they're trying to buy like a mortgage or an offer. So if somebody wants to reach out to you, connect with you for any reason, just to say what up, to thank you for being on the show because it was amazing. I know the listeners are going to love this one.
Yeah, it's a great
one.
It was
a good one. We've got some head shakes behind the cameras, so that's good.
She always says it's good.
They hear them all, too, Jeff. Jeff Lee's to say how bad it was.
No. Yeah. Give us the truth after. She's taking all the notes.
Jeff already knows. When he does something, he does it the best. Okay.
Yeah. But for real, how does somebody connect with you if they want to know more about Insider Investor Club or if they just want to show appreciation for you to come on the show.
So I'm pretty easy to find on the internet since my last name is Ducharme. Spelled Do Us Harm. And if you can't spell those three words, I probably don't want to talk to you. But anyway, spelled Do Us Harm, D-O-U-S-H-A-R-M. Play at a half speed so you can actually hear me. But find me online. I'm pretty easy to find otherwise.
What, like Instagram, Facebook?
Facebook, Instagram, anyone.
Where are you most often when it comes to social? Is it more Facebook? Is it more Instagram if somebody wanted to try to, like, send a DM?
It's and probably 50-50 in both, but if I'm not checking it, I get other people to check it, it'll come to me. And so just reach on there. Or if you want to make it real simple, go to contactjeff.com.
There you go.
Contactjeff.com. Has my information, stuff like that on there.
ICC, Insider Investor Club, you guys have or IIC, sorry.
We just took down our site, but if you want to actually get an event coming up, depending on when you hear this, but we got InsiderSuperBowl.com.
So they will hear this next week.
Cool.
In one week from now.
Good, perfect.
So, yeah, Tony invited me and the wifey down. I'm going to come hang out with you guys.
Drop the details on that.
Yeah, InsiderSuperBowl.com. They'll have all the information. We're renting out the entire rooftop of the Palms Place. Four penthouses, the entire roof. We're going to have some celebrities come in. We're going to have a couple hundred people. Great event. You can do 2-day or 1-day. Just be around the right people. And this is for members and non-members. This will be the only event we throw this year that non-members can come to and kind of see how we roll and the people around and what we do.
And when he says celebrities, he means Trevor and Kale will be there.
Absolutely.
So he's got the D-list guys coming too. You know, hey, we're working our way up to that.
There we go.
A,
there we go.
We're slowly but surely. We can't expect to go from D to A like that. So, guys, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Jeff, you're an amazing individual. We're honored that we've had the chance to even get to know you. Just the price of joining Apex, just to being able to meet the type of people that we've been able to meet, even like remove all content, remove somebody talking on stage, telling you how to get better, whatever. The network itself has just been absolutely incredible, and obviously after the last hour plus, you could see why we surround ourselves with the right people and invest into that environment, similar to insider investor club type situations. So
appreciate you guys.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. And
stoked to actually make it happen finally. You know,
yeah, I know. Right? I mean,
we've tried in Dallas. We've tried other times. Anyway, finally got it to happen.
It didn't work out. Yeah.
Guys, you know, when he said his time was valuable, we only had to pay $50,000 to get his ass here for an hour. So you're welcome. And for that,
we're charging for this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. We're going to drop ads all
Is that really what you were going to say?
Pay for all this shit. But since we paid for Jeff's time, at least drop a fucking review for us. Take care of us.
Our Venmo's this.
Yeah. If you, we're gonna
Trevor's
set up a gold
OnlyFans account.
Yeah, of one. GoFundMe might be more successful than an OnlyFans here. So
the GoFundMe is keep Trevor off OnlyFans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can try. I don't think the GoFundMe gonna hit that target. So guys, we wish you nothing but the best. Take care. Have a kick-ass day. We'll see you next week.